This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Black voters can turn the tide of an election. We've had to fight hard to get the vote from the Emancipation Proclamation to the Civil Rights Movement and beyond. We now continue our month-long series on voting. Today we're going to dig into the nature of black voting patterns and whether there are still ways black voters are being steered away from the polls. In a minute we'll hear from someone from a voter participation outreach group, but now Earl Afari Hutchinson is going to give us a little historical context. He's an LA-based political analyst and author of The Ethnic Presidency, How Race Decides the Race to the White House. Great to have you in again.
My pleasure.
So you recently wrote an article for the Huffington Post called Why 8 Million or More African Americans Are Unregistered. Break down who these folks are.
Well, they come from a variety of segments, demographic segments. It's not monolithic as many people think. When I say that, many people think, oh, these are just poor African Americans, inner city. Not necessarily so. They span all the demographic reaches. Many are middle class, working class, low income, male, female, different ethnic, or I should say religious persuasions, social persuasions. The big question is, why are there so many? This comes up over and over again in one of the most important elections in the last half century, where we obviously have certainly so much at stake with an African-American on the poise of making history as being the first African-American president. Why are so many African-Americans unregistered? By the way, that 8 million is low. Actually, the figure is more like 10 to 11 million African-Americans that are unregistered. So there's a variety of reasons. Many just simply say the standard reasons: lazy, ignorant, indifferent, uninformed, or cynical about the system. All of those certainly are there. But there's much more than that, and that leads us into the suppression, the historic suppression of African Americans as voters. And many of those things that have happened in the past, despite all the court rulings, despite all the lawsuits, despite all the public attention on voter suppression, they're still very much on the table this election.
What is the nature of voter suppression today as opposed to in the past?
The old crude stuff of the past, where we had literacy tests, poll taxes, and out-and-out fraud, and also physical intimidation, those are things of the past. And even the things that we saw in the 2000 presidential election, if you remember in Florida and a couple of other states, but especially Florida, the hanging chads, purging voter rolls, and so forth, huge controversy about that. Well, since then, the ways that votes are suppressed have become much more sophisticated. Right off the top, letter writing. Even though there have been a number of court rulings that say that you can, the GOP, because they were certainly the prime offenders, sending letters out to see if someone actually lives in an address, and then if the letters do not come back, then they can say, ah, you see, they don't live there, therefore they're not a legal registered voter, and they would be challenged at the polls. A lot of that went on in Ohio. Well, what happened was federal rulings prohibited that, but it was only aimed at the Republican National Committee. State and local committees can do it. Volunteer groups can do it. We're going to see a lot of that this time around. Second thing, voter ID, a photo ID. Remember the April Supreme Court ruling saying in Indiana and other states, got to have a photo ID.
Well, I'm actually going to bring in Melanie Campbell. She is the executive director of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. That's a nonpartisan group that tries to increase voter participation in the African American community. Hey, Melanie.
Hi there, Farai. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hi. So we're Earl. Gonna...
How are you?
Great.
Very good.
So we're going to have you guys in conversation, but Melanie, let's talk a little bit more about what you do. You're getting people registered all over the country. What is your tactic? Is it feet on the street, mail? What are you doing?
Well, we're doing we've just about finished our voter registration efforts, but it's been the traditional ways as well as online this time, because that process has helped increase and more people are open to the idea of registering, utilizing online. But we're in the midst right now of doing something called our Vote First campaign to try one of the biggest problems people are going to have and have had in the last, and we saw that happen in the primaries, is not knowing where to go vote, having bad information, end up using provisional ballots. The other is that these states are not prepared for the type of turnout. Some of them are not prepared because they don't want to be prepared, and some of them just not prepared because they don't have the money to address long lines. So we're utilizing early voting as much as possible to try to alleviate that. in Georgia, for instance, where we have our Unity 08 campaign going, in Clayton County, I believe I'm correct, has already 10% of the voters have already voted in Clayton County, which is one of the suburban areas of Atlanta.
Explain the difference, because there's early voting and then there is absentee voting. What's the difference between those two?
Well, in some states, they call it something different. So the best way to describe it is early voting means that states have set aside early, longer times for you to go in and walk in and vote if that's what they have available for you. Some places call it absentee or no-fault absentee. What we have on our website, www.blackcampaign.org, you can go up and find out what your state allows for you to do. And some people, it may be absentee, but they just call it in jargon early voting. So it gets confusing when you try to, because every state is different. And so we've got all 50 states and what you can do. What you can do, some places require you to have a reason for absentee voting. And so we're just utilizing that vote first message to get people to vote early, vote absentee, or be one of the first in line, because the lines are going to be long. You are already seeing turnout levels that are off the charts where you do have early voting, where people are in line for hours because there's not enough machines.
Let me get Earl into this. How big an issue do you think it's going to be to have access to an adequate number of ballot boxes or booths?
I think it's going to be a crucial issue, because remember, one of the things when we talk about voter suppression, it's not overt, it's not crude, the old stuff, that's out. Essentially, just the absence, and certainly it's correct with those that are actually out there on the front lines, they see the absence of many places to actually go vote in primarily minority communities. In other words, you have to have access. Then once you have the access, then are the ballots there? Do you have the voting materials there? Is everything in place? That's been the big complaint in the past, certainly in certain areas. It's not there. So this is something that we have to look out for. And we know that there's going to be thousands and thousands of poll workers out there that are going to be watching hawk-like to make sure, first of all, polls are there. Secondly, the materials are there. So I think this is so crucial. And as you know, the election's really coming down to three or four states. And when that happens, voter suppression in any of those three or four states that in any way, shape, or form that could cut down the numbers could actually be very damaging to one or other of the candidates.
Earl, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, the congresswoman who passed away this year, made a point of stating that she was horrified by how some of the people in her district and in Ohio were given what she felt were inadequate polling voting opportunities in 2004. How does a challenge or a statement like that affect what's happening this time? I mean, was it essentially just a paper protest, or do you think that people are paying attention to that issue?
I think people not only are paying attention to it, but people have to pay attention to it. It still comes back to this. You have to have access. We already know there's a great deal of enthusiasm. There's been a huge mobilization effort on the part of the different campaign committees, both local, national, and certainly statewide, to get people out, to get people registered. Now, people are registering, and as we're hearing now, people are showing up for certainly early voting and certainly absentee balloting. That's going to be off the chart. But it still comes down to this. You got to know where the polling place is. You got to have the materials there, and you got to have access. If that doesn't, if there's any breakdown in any way, shape, or form, that could appreciably cut into the vote. So this was not a false warning, and this was certainly not just a paper challenge. It's a very real challenge that has to be made.
Melanie, again, you're a executive director of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. You do have a lot of groups out there trying to focus on getting Black voters equal access to the polls, including the NAACP. So do you coordinate at all? Do you try to
talk? Oh, yes. We have something called the Unity 08 campaign, and all of our organizations, traditional and non-traditional, you remember Black You Vote. We're out there right now partnered with Bow Wow, going on his tour, helping to finalize voter registration as well as start getting out the vote. We're in 11 states where we actually have ground operations that's been going on all year through the primaries and, of course, now. And a couple of things that we really want people to know, Earl mentioned a very good point. We study what happens in the elections now, so we know how to try to improve it. poll location, knowing where to go vote, critical. So we have a free hotline. 1-866-MY-VOTE-1 gives you that. There are many websites out there. People need to prepare to go vote. And if folks are in that kind of mindset, there's a determination that I have not. I've been doing this, been at this organization 15 years, and I have not seen the level of excitement and enthusiasm and determination that's out there. So the biggest challenge we have are the kind of games that get played, you know, out there now, with the voter purges that folks know are against the law that are going on in Colorado, in Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Nevada, and North Carolina. Very, very key places. Georgia, folks are being warned about voter citizenship checks. In Alabama, they won't even let our folks register people in Jefferson County, Birmingham, Alabama, in 2008. There were people who are incarcerated, who are waiting, who are eligible to register, stopped allowing that to happen, won't let them give them absentee ballot information, nothing. And so there's a lot of things in the lawyer groups that we're working with, in NACP Legal Defense Fund and Advancement Project, and people and very miserable, and we're trying to work. We just finished a meeting over there at NCNW with our legal groups, our folks on the ground, and doing everything we can. So it's information, and I appreciate you having this series, because information is what's going to be the course. The other challenge is, where 4 years ago, Internet, of course, has been nothing doing but growing. Internet this time, in this election, is much more pervasive in getting out that bad information. So it's being able to get the information to counter that, about whether or not you can or you cannot wear your paraphernalia when you go vote.
Can you or not?
Go ahead, Shalala.
I said, can you or not? Because that...
Well, it depends on where you are. So what we decided in all of our groups is to tell folks the best thing to do, because poll workers a lot of times have good intentions. They may not know the laws. And so what we're saying is it's best not to.
Don't wear an Obama or McCain t-shirt.
Don't wear Obama, McCain, buttons, t-shirts, whatever, when you go vote. You know, go in there. Just to avoid any problems. It's all about... Not denying you your right, but all the legal groups have decided that's the best way to avoid that problem.
Let me get Earl in on a different issue, which is that there is constantly this tension in the discussion of voter disenfranchisement between the idea that some people who should be allowed to vote are being prevented from voting, and the other opposite idea that some people who should not be allowed to vote, whether they're dead people or, you know, people who don't qualify, you know, are being registered. And to that point, on Tuesday, state authorities raided the Las Vegas offices of ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. The group admitted there was some fraud in their voter registration, and that was the reason for the raid, was allegations of fraud. ACORN released a statement saying that they were blaming saying that it was a single canvasser who did the fraud. The Secretary of State's office in Nevada said the purpose, or let me say Nevada, I have been corrected before, the purpose of the raid was to determine who's at fault, and that raid came 2 months after state and federal authorities created an election fraud task force in Nevada. Now, ACORN is not specifically a black organization, but to some people, because it works with low-income folks, it is sort of a code for...
A partisan organization.
Yeah. So do you think that this admission that there was fraud, at least at some level, could hurt the back and forth over what's an appropriate line for voter checks?
Well, I think that's the intent. Certainly in Nevada, we have seen state and local organizations and volunteer groups at every step of the way they're going to raise some challenge. Particularly when we look at ACORN, remember in 2004 they put out Project Vote Report, which documented a 50-year history of Republican GOP suppression of minority voters. So ACORN's an obvious target. Will it have a chilling effect? Should it have a chilling effect? Obviously, the intent is to have a chilling effect on groups like ACORN, which are seen as totally biased toward the Democratic Party, not objective at all. Should it have a chilling effect? No, because ACORN has done a pretty good job, a very balanced job when you look at their reports in terms of documenting voter suppression and voter fraud. So I don't think this should be an issue here, whether one individual, the fault of one individual, even several individuals did it. This is one place, one time. For Ray, as you know, this is a national election, a 50-state election, not just one precinct or one district in one state.
Melanie, how tough is it for you to stick to regulations? I mean, is there a lot of regulation of voter registration?
Well, the thing, because, you know, before I came here, I lived many of my years in Atlanta, Georgia, working with the NAACP, so I've been doing voter registration since I was a student. The biggest challenge that you have is the process of getting away from volunteerism as a means of doing this kind of work. I got involved in it as a student because the NAACP recruited me to be a volunteer on doing voter registration. What we are advocating for is that we get back to the idea of people volunteering their time and not getting into where you call somewhat of a bounty system, so to speak, where people get paid to register people to vote, and to get away from that. And really, this election cycle, most of the people who are registering it's a volunteer effort for the most part, in most cases. You got these millions that are being registered, but you don't have the same kind of things. The last two election cycles, 2004 and 2006, you saw more of that kind of effort. So we're glad to see people doing it on their own. People are registering their neighbors.
All right,
that's
Melanie,
where we need to go back to.
I have to jump in really quickly from each of you. What should folks do if they're having problems on Election Day?
Two things. Number one, the challenge is there. If, in fact, you know that there's a problem, what you have to do is you have to certainly notify the local campaign headquarters, Democrat or Republican. There are attorneys out there. They'll be right on the spot. That should be the thing. And the second thing is that people should be on that day. They should be there at the polls and certainly armed with the fact that we have their legal identification, if it's a photo ID or whatever, and therefore they are legally registered to vote and entitled to vote.
All right, Melanie.
Don't leave.
One sentence.
If you know that you are registered to vote, do not leave that polling place. Right. Make sure you find someone. There'll be plenty of folks out there working to make sure that you know. Go, and the second thing is know where you're going to go vote. Because if
All
you
right,
get in
Melanie.
That long line, you're going to have problems if you are in the wrong location. Your vote won't count.
Okay, Melanie Earle, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We were speaking with Melanie Campbell, Executive Director of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and Earl Afari Hutchinson, an L.A.-based author and political analyst. He was at NPR West. Coming up on News and Notes, we discuss all the sports you can handle on our Sports Bloggers Roundtable.